Tonight on Arena, Chris Morrish brings us through the shortlist for this year's International Dublin Literary Award and new albums from Matt Berninger, Katie Malua and Paddy Hanna up for review. Five one double 51 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. It's that time of year again when Dublin City Council is building up to the announcement next Thursday of the winner of this year's International Dublin Literary Award. The prize is worth €100,000 to the winner, and if the book is in translation, the author gets €75,000, the translator €25,000. The long list of 156 titles is created by library users all over the world. A judging panel whittles that down to 10, and from that 10, next Thursday's winner will be chosen. With me this evening, Chris Morrish, the chair of the judging panel, and we're planning, Chris, to work our way through the 10 shortlisted books to give listeners a flavour of what's involved in each one of them. But the International Dublin Literary Award itself, Chris, it's so unlike other prizes in many ways, but the big thing is the fact that the readers are given a voice in the choices here.
Yeah, that's right, Sean. I think that's the thing that I think it's really special about this. We have libraries in 119 cities around the world in 40 countries. That means there's an incredible reach. I mean, if you think of every library, you think your local library and the way in which it reaches out to so many members of the community in so many different ways, all of those people are feeding into that long list. So I think there's probably no other literary award in the world, really, I'll go out on a limb and say that, that has such a reach in terms of how it draws its short or its long list up.
And it's not surprising then that on the shortlist we have a number of books that have already won big prizes, which may have brought readers to them in the first place.
Yes, we do. I mean, this is the thing I love about this is, you know, when we go through the long list, we have a Nobel laureate here. We have a book that's already won the Booker. At the same time, we have two first-time novelists on here. And because it's libraries and because it's local libraries, there are books that might not be on people's radar that a reader somewhere picks up on and can nominate, and it can make its way into the long list and from the long list to the short list. So it really is an award that kind of levels the playing field.
The other thing that really struck me looking at the shortlist of 10 writers, particularly this year, is the variety, the diversity that is there in terms of gender, in terms of race, ethnicity, geography, right across the board. Debut novelists and, as you said, award-winning novelists, very experienced novelists as well. How accidental is that diversity in the 10 shortlisted books?
I think it's telling, actually. I think it's something that tells me something about the state of the novel. As the chair of the judging panel, one of the first things I'd say to the judges is, look, we're not here to try to produce a particular kind of shortlist. We have no quota in terms of gender, ethnicity, race, geography, anything like that. You're just here to try and find the best 10 best novels we can find, and from that, the best one. What is interesting is using that criteria, we ended up with a shortlist, and as we go through it, we'll see a shortlist where 8 of the 10 are women, 4 of those are women of color, and of the 2 men, one is a Native American, and one is a gay man. So there isn't a single kind of, white, straight, middle-aged male writer on the shortlist, and that's not intentional, but I think it tells us where the novel's going.
But it must have been a joy to see that when you looked at the 10 shortlisted books.
Yeah, I felt sort of proud, I thought, okay, we produced a really interesting, diverse shortlist here. But I think what it also tells us is that there are certain kinds of stories that haven't been told, or there have been stories that haven't been told in certain ways. And those stories are starting to be told now. So what we'll see on the shortlist are novels that take some stories we think we know and change the perspective in such a way that it becomes a completely new story.
Well, let's take a look at the specifics then of the 10 books. And we will talk a little bit about each book so that we show no favour.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We need to be clear on that. And the order we've chosen is alphabetical in terms of titles. So there's no significance in which books we hear from first or hear talk about first, second, third, or indeed last. So the first one that we'll be speaking about, All the Lives We Never Lived. Anuradha Roy is the Indian writer that we have here. This is set against the background background of World War II and Indian independence, Chris.
It is, yes. And but it again, it's this thing of changing perspective. I mean, it starts out with the perspective of a small boy, this boy Mishkin, who is kind of watching his world and watching his world, things happening in his world that he doesn't quite understand. But it also, it kind of has a kind of reach. I mean, it brings us, you know, not just to India, but to Dutch-controlled Bali in the 1930s. It has the feel of an historical epic, but an historical epic that's filtered through the eyes of a small boy initially. And that's what gives it a freshness. There's also real engagement there with Indian literature as well. I mean, there's the kind of figures, major figures from Indian literature kind of make their way into the novel as well.
And I suppose it's always a question in and around historical fiction, you know, where does the history end and the fiction begin? Did you get involved in the kind of balance involved there? Or is that indeed part of the discussions that you might be having now as you're talking about the shortlist?
I think it is. I mean, I suppose it's not so much trying to measure the book against an historical reality, but it's how vividly it brings you into that world. And one of the things this book does, you know, gives you a world that's palpable. You can feel it. You can smell it. You can, you know, you can scent the trees. You really get a sense of what this world is like. And to me, that's what a great novel does.
Great. And indeed, the book has been long listed for the Walter Scott Prize for Historical Fiction in 2018. She herself was long listed for the Man Booker, International Man Booker, or the Man Booker Prize in 2015. So a lot of experience and a lot of success already there. Let's move on then to An American Marriage. Tiare Jones is the writer here. Really, we're dealing with the incarceration, mass incarceration of African-American men in America, Chris. And the story's a brilliantly named characters, I have to say here. Roy Othaniel Hamilton and his wife, Celestial Gloriana.
I know, they're great names, aren't they? It really, if you want to know why there are Black Lives Matter protests happening, I mean, there's, you know, we've lots of reasons we know why, but if you want to know that from the inside, this is a novel that brings you into that world, because, you know, here are two African American people, a married couple, their lives are you know, are really heading in the right direction. I mean, Roy has this great kind of monologue where he talks about going to university, and, you know, everything's going well, and then he's arrested wrongfully, and it's about how that world comes apart. And you feel the injustice of it. You don't have to be, you know, told this is unjust. You
right.
feel it.
Well, let's listen to a clip from the book that will give us a sense of that, An American Marriage. And it's the voice of the narrator, Roy, here, and the actor reading the part is Kwaku Fortune.
However, she sleeps in the very house she grew up in. I, on the other hand, departed on the first thing smoking. Exactly 71 hours after high school graduation. I would have left sooner, but the trailways had passed you Elo every day. By the time the mailman brought my mama the cardboard tube containing my diploma, I was all moved into my dorm room at Morehouse College, attending a special program for first-generation scholarship types. We were invited to show up 2.5 months before the legacies to get the lay of the land and bone up on the basics. Imagine. 23 young black men watching Spike Lee's School Days and Sidney Poitier's To Sir With Love on loop, and you either will or will not get the picture. Indoctrination isn't always a bad thing. Atlanta is where I learned the rules. I learned them quick. Ain't nobody call me stupid. But home isn't where you land. Home is where you launch. You can't pick your home no more than you can choose your family.
Kwaku Fortune there, reading from Tiare Jones's novel, An American Marriage, the second of the 10 shortlisted books for the International Dublin Literary Award. We're discussing all 10 with the chair of the judging panel, Chris Moresh, this evening. Let's move on to Disoriental. Debut novel, this one, Chris, from a writer called Negar Javadi. This is the only book, I think, in translation on the shortlist this year, isn't it?
No, we have two others.
I beg your pardon. We'll
flag them when we get to them.
Yes.
This is one of two. This is one of two first-time novels, and it's a remarkable debut. Negar Javadi she's French-Iranian, I suppose would be the description. I mean, she lives in Paris, writes in French, but her family are Iranian. And there's a kind of quasi-autobiographical quality to this. I mean, if you think you know the kind of history of Iran. Read this book, because it kind of, again, brings you into that history. The main character, her grandfather was born in a harem in the mountains, and it's just, you know, completely other world. And then her father's an intellectual who, first of all, is involved in the revolt against the Shah, and then after the Iranian Revolution, is in rebellion against the Islamic regime in Iran. So it's somebody who's on the wrong side of things all the time.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the important, very important issues in the book is the central character, Kimia, a tomboy in a society that certainly doesn't recognise the phenomenon of tomboyedness.
Well, I mean, that's how she appears when she's younger. They just think she's a tomboy. Mm. I mean, she's bisexual, effectively, and she's a character who, you know, has a kind of ambiguous sexuality, and this puts her in tension with the kind of society that she comes from, particularly some of the older members of the society. But then, of course, she begins to realize that, in fact, you know, one of her uncles is in fact gay, and that there is a kind of gay life in Iran, the Iran that she comes from. I mean, it gives you a very, very palpable sense of that intellectual culture of dissent in Iran, and just what a lively thing that is.
Let's move on then. That's book number 3 of the 10 shortlisted books on this year's International Dublin Literary Award. Book number 4, Drive Your Plough Over the Bones of the Dead. Great title. Olga Tokarczuk is the Polish writer involved here. Her novel Flights was awarded the International Man Booker in 2018. But she's been castigated in her homeland of Poland for her outspoken feminism. What is she exploring in this book, Drive Your Plough Over the Bones of the Dead, Chris?
Yeah, it's a great title, isn't it? That's actually a line from William Blake. She also won the Nobel Prize in 2018. So here, you know, here we just went from Javadi, a first-time novelist, to Tokarczuk, who is, you know, a Nobel laureate. So this is the kind of range we have here. This is a wonderful novel. I mean, it starts off, I mean, and it looks like, you know, starts off like a lot of good novels with a dead body. So initially you think, okay, there's a mystery here. But you have a narrator who is wonderfully unreliable in a sense. You know, she starts off, you know, she wakes up and she's confused. She talks about her illnesses and her condition. And you're led through this world where she is very much a kind of a critic of the society in which she lives. Mm. And that's very much contemporary Poland. You know, the Poland that is very much leaning towards the right in various ways.
The other thing that the other quality that the narrator has, the Janina, is that she has a touch of a Miss Marple about her, an Eastern European Miss Marple, because it seems at one level like a murder mystery, but there's a lot more going on.
There's a lot more going on. It's also very funny. I mean, it's a very funny novel because you have this character who sees the world at a slightly skewed angle. And I think, I mean, you know, we were saying at the top of the program about the ways in which I think the novel is showing us things we think we know in a different way. And this is a classic example of that. Here we have a character or a narrator who sees the world just slightly askew.
Yeah. Okay. That's book number 4 then, Drive Your Plough Over the Bones of the Dead. Book number 5, and indeed here it is, the second of the 3 books in translation, first published in French in 2016, History of Violence by Edward Louis. Lauren Steen is the translator here. I spoke to Edward Louis about his book, The End of Eddie. It's very autobiographical, about his own impoverished childhood. The History of Violence, similar ground being mined here, autobiographical material, Chris?
Yes, it is. I mean, Edward Louis is he's a kind of classic French intellectual in a funny way. I mean, he grew up in a fairly poor background, gay, you know, very, very strongly on the left. I mean, edited a book on Pierre Bourdieu. I mean, he's, you know, so he's very, you know, wrote a manifesto published in Le Monde. So he's that kind of Parisian public intellectual. This is a harrowing book. I mean, this is really a disturbing book in a way. A young gay man on his way home in Paris one night brings home a stranger who subsequently rapes him.
I tell you, let's listen to a clip, in fact, which describes the kind of fear that the narrator is living, is under. He's in fear for his life in this section, read from History of Violence by Johnny Ward.
It wasn't yet light out. The street was empty. I was alone. And as I stumbled along, though I had such a short way to go, I found myself counting in my haste. Just 50 more steps. Keep going. Just 20 more steps. And you're there. I hurried faster. and my impatience for the future, which would somehow or other dispatch, consign, reduce this scene to the past, I found myself thinking, in a week, you'll say it's been a whole week since it happened. Keep going. And in a year, you'll say it's been a whole year since it happened. The drops of freezing rain weren't beating down, but fell in a thin, clammy drizzle that soaked through the canvas of my shoes. The water oozed its way through my insoles and the fabric of my socks. I was cold, and I thought, he could come back. He's bound to come back. Now I can never go home. He's driven me from my home.
Johnny Ward there reading from Edward Louis's History of Violence, one of the fifth of the shortlisted books on this year's International Dublin Literary Awards, discussing the shortlist with chair of the judging panel, Chris Morris. You really pick up the fear even off that section that we heard read there, Chris.
You do, and it's you know, it's about the trauma of suffering an attack. It's also, I think, the kind of conflicting feelings that the narrator feels afterwards. You know, he feels guilty sometimes for turning in the person who attacked him to the police. He's the young man who attacks him is a Berber. The police call him an Arab. So he becomes involved in the kind of racial politics of it. It's a very, very powerful and complex novel.
This one, I think, would be familiar to lots of listeners to this programme. The Milkman, book number 6. Anna Barnes, a Northern Irish writer, Booker Prize winner in 2019. Very distinctive style. How would you describe the style of Anna Barnes in this novel, Chris Morrish?
I think, again, if a great novel is a world, it creates its own world. This is a novel that does that. And again, it's this thing of taking something we think we know and just changing the perspective. I mean, we've all read lots of Troubles fiction, lots of novels about conflict in Northern Ireland. This just takes that, takes it to another level by giving us another perspective, the perspective of this character who lives in this intensely insular world. So, you know, you get the opening line, you know, the day somebody makes somebody put a gun to my breast. You know, none of the characters have names. There's somebody like McSomebody, second sister's husband. Nobody has a proper name because everybody knows who everybody is. It just creates this sense of a claustrophobic enclosed community with a really powerful intensity.
And really comments on the Northern Irish Troubles, but in an oblique way, in a way that I haven't seen done before about that particular topic.
Yes, that's right. And I mean, I suppose it also just won the Ewart Briggs Award as well. Beating out Derry Girls, which is no mean feat.
Certainly not. Belfast versus Derry, that's a big battle. Let's move on to book number 7, The Friend, from Sigrid Nunez. Who is the friend in question here?
The friend in question is a Great Dane. this is a wonderful novel.
Not a Shakespearean character, a dog.
No, it's a dog. Sigrid Nunez is, again, she's an intensely New York writer. I mean, she's somebody who writes for The New Yorker, The New Yorker Review of Books, very much involved in that writerly world. And this is a novel about a character who very much inhabits that world, or sort of on the edges of it, who is friends with this older male writer who, you know, is sort of a generation of writers who does all sorts of politically incorrect things in terms of having relationships with people and so on. And this is not giving a whole lot away because it happens the first page. He dies and he wills her his Great Dane. And so we have this novel that's about grief, it's about friendship, it's about literature, and it's about dogs. And it's just a wonderful novel.
It's also a book about creative writing, and it starts to examine how some people might feel the Me Too campaign has silenced or certainly made some writers nervous about what they're doing. That's a moot point that will anger people, even the point being made.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it's the dog acts as a kind of metaphor in a very, very kind of clear way. It's like, you know, imagine somebody willed you a Great Dane. I mean, you'd love it, but it would also be a bit of an encumbrance and a bit of a nuisance and a bit of an embarrassment. And this is kind of the way the friend is. This friend of hers who has died is somebody who, you know, she recognizes would be on the wrong side of Me Too in lots of ways, and yet she was close to him, that he was a friend. Mm. And the dog is a bit like that.
Good way of making the point through the mouth of a dog, I guess. Book number 8 then, The Silence of the Girls, Pat Barker. We spoke to Pat Barker as well when The Silence of the Girls was published. This is her take on the Iliad, and she's done something very important here. We always hear the story from the point of view of the boys who are doing the fighting. This is the story reclaimed for the women involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's this thing of taking a story we think we know. I mean, you know, is there any story we think we know any better than the Trojan War, and telling it from the perspective of one of the female characters, a character named Briseis, who's taken as a captive and basically given to Achilles. What Barker does with this is really remarkable, because, you know, she's a writer who writes war better than anybody. I mean, if you know any of her, you know, her books about the First World War, you know, Regeneration, The Ghost Road, I mean, they're harrowing battle sequences in those books. Well, here she does the same thing with the Trojan War, but from the perspective of this female character.
Yeah. Let's hear a bit of that perspective, the narrator Briseis, read here by Shauna Kerslake.
I noticed Ismene, who was 4 months pregnant with my husband's child, pressing her hands hard into her stomach, trying to convince herself the pregnancy didn't show. In the past few days, I'd often seen her looking at me. Ismene, who'd once been so careful never to meet my eyes. And her expression had said, more clearly than any words, "It's your turn now. Let's see how you like it." It hurt, that rash, unblinking stare. I came from a family where slaves were treated kindly. And when my father gave me in marriage to Mines, the king, I carried on that tradition in my own home. I'd been kind to Ismene. Or I thought I had. But perhaps no kindness was possible between owner and slave, only varying degrees of brutality. I looked across the room at Ismene and thought, yes, you're right.
Shauna Kerslake there, reading from The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker. 2 to go, Chris Morris. Let's go through them. They're There by Tommy Orange. Interesting title, that. Gertrude Stein gave him that. Her childhood city of Oakland, California. A link, I presume, with that city in the book?
There is, very much. But again, not in Oakland, California that we think we know, if we think we know Oakland, California. Tommy Orange is a member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes. So he's a Native American. This novel actually had the most nominations of any novel on the list. It was nominated by 13 libraries. It's a first-time novel, which again is remarkable. And he's writing about what he calls urban Indians, about the Native American peoples who are living in cities, living in places like Oakland. It has a kind of structure of a crime novel. There's a kind of elaborate heist that the plot revolves around. But really, it's about the lives of people who are, in some ways, displaced. You know, people for whom there is no there.
Let's move on to the final book, Washington Black. He's at that book is there because of the title, beginning with W. Essie Aduyan, the author here. An 11-year-old field slave who knows no other life than the Barbados sugar plantation where he was born. What is Aduyan giving us in this novel, Chris?
Aduyan is doing something wonderful with this novel. This is like the kind of the big adventure novels of the 19th century. This is like Jules Verne. Mm. This is like H. Rider Haggard. Except the protagonist is a young African-American slave named Titch. The opening section is harrowing. I mean, it's a harrowing of life on a plantation. And Titch is taken out of this, and he ends up in this kind of world of adventure and, you know, hot air balloons, and he ends up in Morocco and the Arctic. And it's just a wonderfully enjoyable novel. I mean, I saw somebody picking one up in a bookshop in Dublin the other day, and I said, buy it. You'll love it.
You've had great joy, obviously, reading all 10 of them and enjoying all 10 of them. And you're the non-voting chair, so you don't have to get into that decision, like Christopher. But you can listen to the great discussions that will be had over the coming week. That's Christopher Morash. Thank you very much for bringing us through the shortlist there, Chris. And the winner of the International Dublin Literary Award will be announced on Thursday next.